Now it's being recorded. Thank you for pointing that out. And the recording, it took me a while to get the files to work out, and it still hasn't for the afternoon one, but the morning one I finally got posted this morning, so it's now on the website, and hopefully it'll be faster today. I think I've worked out the issues. Okay, let's see. Other questions or comments? Okay. All right. So let's see. Yeah. So why don't we start by looking at, as advertised, the problems that we looked at last time. So let's see. Let me just bring them up. And why don't people tell me which ones they had a chance to look at. So I'd hope that people would have a chance to try to write up at least one of them. So I'm curious which ones people chose. Okay, yeah, so these are the problems that we looked at last time. So let's see. Okay, let's see, 17.6. Okay, so several people looked at the 17.6 one. All right, and did you guys who looked at that 17.6 one find anything surprising or that something didn't work out well or worked out better than we found in our discussion? Did anyone want to comment on that? Nope. Okay. All right. And let's see. And then, on let's see, so it looks like people also looked at the one with the a number. Did you end up getting the same number that we found yesterday? For fall 13 problem one. Yes, okay, good. All right. Okay, and then for 16.3, I see at least one person looked at that one, problem three on fall 2016. Which theorem did you end up using for that? Right. Okay. That's right. Yeah. That's that would be. Yeah, that's the one we discussed, and it seemed to be working well. Okay. Let's see. And were there any other thoughts or comments about these old ones before looking at a new old exam? Okay, so then let me just bring up this old exam, and we'll just do what we did last time. So just read through them and try to figure out what type of a problem they are, just like before. And so, so for the old exam, identify the type. So the types of so which theorems are likely to be used, and also we can try to figure out which one the easiest one is. So where to get started on these exams? Okay, so let me just bring that up and also put in the chat box the address. So this is the fall of 2019 exam. Okay, so I put it in the chat box. Oh, and I'm sorry, I didn't finish the screen share. So let me do that correctly. Okay, so now it should be visible in both locations. Okay, so I'll just give you a couple of minutes then to look that over. Okay, let's see. So did anyone want a little more time, or should we start running through these? All right, so let me try this annotation again. All right, so so let's just try what we did last time. So let's just start with what some of the main ideas or the type of problem that each one is. All right, so if we start with number one here, how would you classify or try to approach that problem? Okay, right. So yeah, so you can use the definition and Hilbert spaces. That's right. So I would sort of classify it as some sort of Hilbert space problem, I guess. And as you say, we require the definition probably is enough for the compact operators. Okay. All right, and let's see. So then, what about the second one? Right. Yep. So here it's mostly generalized functions or distributions. And yeah, I agree. It's direct computation. So a lot of it's figuring out the definitions, making sure that you understand what it means to be a tempered distribution. Okay, so this is the kind of problem that might turn out to be fairly easy if you remember the definitions, and sort of impossible if you don't. So it's the kind to keep your eyes open for. All right, number three then. Right, so this looks some sort of convergence theorem, which is closer to what we'll be looking at today. Yeah, so like the DCT, MCT, right? All right, and then the last one, I'm sorry, the fourth one, there are six. Yeah, it's probably integration by parts kind of thing. Yeah. And it's also the kind of thing that sort of comes up in Sobolev type problems, so you might call it that. Yes, that's another good point. Yep. Okay. All right, and number five. Yeah, so this looks a lot like a Fourier problem. Okay, and actually, what would be the hints that that's going to be Fourier? Which sorts of which aspects of that problem make it clear that that would be related to the Fourier transform? Yeah, we have the L2, right? Yeah, and this integral is really a convolution. That's right. We're convolving. And so this is a convolution. And L2 and convolutions are two things that work very nicely with Fourier transforms. Okay, very good. And then what about the last one? Yep, Hilbert space definitions. Right, so it's kind of straightforward Hilbert space stuff. Okay, very good. And let's, maybe we can try this once again. If you can try just annotating which one you think is easiest, the one to start with. Yeah, if I was getting a lot of votes. So. Right. Yeah, and I think I agree that's going to be a fairly straightforward one. And once again, worth noting, it was way down the page. So you had to read all the way down to number 5 to spot what is actually a fairly easy one. Right. Okay, any other thoughts or comments about this exam before proceeding to looking at, convergence theorems and then convergence problems? Okay, so let me go back to the whiteboard and write down some theorems. Okay, so let's see. So some basic some theorems that come up in convergence. Let me see which ones I thought of, and feel free to suggest others. So theorems for convergence that we should maybe keep an eye open for, although, of course, some of these problems are mostly just understanding the definitions and making it all, and just running through direct computations. But let's see, so just in what we were discussing right now, we already saw things like the dominated convergence theorem. Okay, which I looked up, so that's theorem 12.35 in Hunter-Nachtigal. Okay, now let's see, so do people remember what that one says?
If you have a function that is bounded above by an integrable function, your integral is integrable.
Okay, yeah, so, but it can also be applied to collections of functions.
Yeah.
Right, okay, and so that's the...
If you have a sequence of functions that are all bounded above by an integrable function, then the sequence converges in L1.
That sounds right. Yeah. So if we have these are all integrable, and fn is less than some g for all n. Then then the resulting thing is integrable, and in fact, if you have this fn converging to f pointwise, then you actually get that the integral is what you expect. And so then the integral of the fn converges to the integral of the f. So that's useful. As long as it's all dominated, things don't escape off to infinity. All right, and there are variations, of course, on that. The monotone convergence theorem and Fatou's lemma that you might also look up. Okay, so let's see. So what else? So another one that comes up is one that we already talked about from last time, and that would be the uniform boundedness principle. Okay, and since people just looked that up, what can someone tell me what that one says? So if I have a family of functions, phi n, that are in, say, the dual space to a Banach space, okay, then what do I need?
Bn of x is finite for all x.
Okay, right. So for all x in x, the set of all phi n of x is bounded, right? Then what do I get out of it?
Then phi n will be bounded.
Yeah, that's right. So then these are uniformly bounded. Okay, and that one came up in one of the problems that we were looking at last time that at least one person chose to write up, right? Okay, let's see. So what else comes up? Let's see. Oh, yeah, there's different types of convergence. There's weak convergence and strong convergence, and sometimes you can get one from the other, right? So strong convergence is not surprisingly stronger. So if it's true, then you have weak convergence. But sometimes you can get weak convergence plus a little bit gives you strong convergence. And so here's another theorem. So if we're in a Hilbert space and we have a weakly convergent sequence, so I usually write this half arrow for weakly convergent to X in a Hilbert space H. And so what's the other condition that I need to assert that this will then converge strongly to X? Okay, so this means weak, and this means strong, but I need one more condition. So what does anyone remember what that would be? So it's good also to keep in mind some examples of things that converge weakly but do not converge strongly, like the sequence of bases, E1, E2, E3, E4, that converges weakly to zero but not strongly. Right, and so the problem is that stuff escapes to infinity. So we need a condition to avoid that. And we're going to tell me, or shall I tell you what the condition is?
I think is it sufficient if the norm of xn converges to the norm of x?
That is exactly correct. That is sufficient. Right. The problem is that the norm of xn might be too big. But as long as it's as small as the norm of x, then you are in good shape. Right. And that's often handy. Okay, let's see. So another type of approximation that's, I'm sorry, of convergence theorem that one gets when you have almost everywhere convergence. So pointwise, like in this dominated, like in the dominated convergence version. Whoops. Yeah. So like up here in dominated, where we have things that are converging pointwise or almost everywhere, there's a similar statement to Egeroff's theorem. It says that if we have a bunch of functions on a measure space, so measurable maps from X to something that can be fairly general. Let me just write C. These Fn converge almost everywhere to F. Oh, and let me take our measure space to be finite. Okay. It converges. It doesn't converge uniformly, but it comes close. And so what you have is that for every epsilon, there's a set E which has small measure. So the measure of E is less than epsilon, and everywhere else it converges uniformly. That's another useful convergence theorem. Let me think. So let me just mention a couple, three more. Let's see. There's the Banach-Alioglu theorem. So is that one familiar to people? So this is a theorem 8.45 in Hunter-Nachtigall. Anyone recognize that one?
Is that the compactness of the unit ball in the weak star topology or something?
That's exactly what it is. That's right. So for any Banach space, the closed unit ball. In a Banach space. But it has to be a dual to something, X star, so if the weak star topology makes sense, is a weak star compact. And there's a typical and useful example, e.g., if X is just a Hilbert space, then does anyone know what the weak star topology on the dual space to a Hilbert space is?
Itself, because it's reflexive.
That's right. And well, and the topology, which topology?
So reflexivity gives you the weak star convergence on a Hilbert space is just equivalent to weak convergence in the original Hilbert space.
That's exactly right. Exactly. So. The closed ball is weak compact. Correct. So that's probably the most common example where you use that. Okay. Let's see. Questions about that one? All right. Let's see. What else do we have here? Oh, there's also another compactness criterion that comes up. Guess it's not exactly convergence, but it's a sort of a compactness. Arzela-Ascoli. Maybe I'll just write down the names of these and can look it up if you don't remember it. So this is a compactness criterion for CK. And one other useful convergence type thing is Stone-Weierstrass. Okay, which is, and this one is theorem 2.12, and this one is theorem 2.9. Okay, and actually, why don't I write one down? Can anyone tell me what the Stone-Weierstrass theorem is, or at least the Weierstrass theorem?
Polynomials are dense in a closed kind of like compact domain.
Exactly, yeah. So polys are dense in omega subset of Rn compact. That's the Weierstrass version, and there is a more general version. I guess you could look it up. Did someone tell me?
On a compact Hausdorff space, a subalgebra of the continuous functions is dense if it separates points and contains the constant functions, I think.
That's correct. Right, and so the polynomial is a special case, which is the most common. I guess trig polynomials are the next most common. Okay, so that's a bunch of sort of convergence theorems that you should keep in mind and look up if you are not familiar with them already. Questions about those? Okay, so then if not, what I wanted to do was basically what we did yesterday and look at a number of problems, and some of these may use some of these terms, they might use something a little different, or they may just be sort of trying to remember the definitions of the different types of convergence and just checking directly that those work. Okay, if there are no questions about this, then I'll switch back to the screen share. Okay. And I think that's the right address there in the chat box. Okay, so is everyone able to see the problem one way or another? Okay, great. Then let's just spend a minute or two looking at that and see what ideas we have. All right, let's see. So anyone want to feel free to raise your hand if you want another minute or so. Otherwise, we can start looking at it. Okay, all right, so so what thoughts did people have on this one?
Well, part B is just the Banach-El-Oglu theorem.
Okay, so does everyone see why that's true? Right. Okay, and so then for A.
So I had an idea. So for A, one direction is not so bad. So if it converges weakly, if the sequence converges weakly, then the distance is going to be zero. I mean, that one seems kind of straightforward.
Okay.
Because, I mean, yeah. So each term is bounded in the, anyway, some sort of dominated convergence to zero or something like that. Anyway.
Okay.
For the other direction, that one's more interesting. If it converges in the metric, if the sequence converges in the metric, then sort of for every EM, the XKs converge sort of almost weakly to Y against an EN, right? So that means that if you look at the span, the space that's the span of the ENs,
okay,
right? Just the normal span, which is dense. So if you look at that span, then you know that the XKs have to converge weakly to X on the span of the ENs, but that's dense.
Okay, let's see. So I see. So you've got that this is so by this, of course, what you mean, let me just write it out so there's clear everyone. So this is AK, EK, where this is finite. That's the key, right?
Yeah, it's finite.
Yep. So this, and the claim though is that this now is, obviously it's not everything, but it's dense in here.
Yeah. Okay. Sort of. Or off normal basis.
Right. And so that means that you're going to check that that this is, let's see, which direction are you going now? You're going to say that if the distance is zero, then they are converging in each, for every element of this set.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weak, in the sense that the pairing with every element of this set goes to zero.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So so if X, let's see, let me try to get the order correctly. So the logic of the statement is that if the distance is zero, in this metric, then, is that the right way to say it, or should I write it as, let's say, xn approaching zero?
Yeah, if the d of xky approaches zero, or xkx approaches zero.
Okay, so maybe I'll write it that way. So if distance from xk to y approaches zero, then
For every n, the corresponding xk minus y against en goes to zero.
Okay, so then for all of these v's in this dense set, you have that the distance from xk to y, the pairing of that with this v goes to zero, right? Okay, and so the point is that since this is dense, that's enough to check to see that you're getting, that it would actually work for everything in H. Okay. So that's an idea. So any other thoughts? Okay. If there are no further, if anyone wants to comment further on this one, feel free. Otherwise, we can look at a next problem. Okay. Let me just move on to the next one then. So, all right. And of course, so I'll give you a minute or two to read through it, but if you have any questions about notation or anything, please bring those up as soon as those come to mind so we can clarify that.
I noticed with this problem that I don't think those are actually Cesaro means. It just averages. Because Cesaro means are averages of the partial sums, and this is just a straight up average. It even says if the averages of its partial sums converge strongly, but then it does not give us the average of its partial sums. It's just an average, right? The average of its partial sums would have a double sum.
I mean, I think this is what they want. Maybe if they would you call it this if they said it was the average over the partial sum?
I mean, what they have is just converging in the average, which is right. Independent converging in the Cesaro sense.
Okay, so in any case, I do think that they mean what the equation.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Feel free to raise your hand if you want another minute or two before looking at part A. Okay, I don't see anyone. All right, so did people have some thoughts about how to prove A here?
You just use the limit definition, and then it just computes straight out.
Okay, direct computation. Okay, did other people agree with that? Find that that was effective? Feel free to just type in the chat box if you agreed with that. Okay. Well, in any case, I agree. All right, it should be a direct computation. All right, and let's see. So what about B? So these, for B and C, we're looking for actual examples, and it's good to have a kind of a list of examples in mind for this kind of problem. Okay, so do people have any ideas for B, like either an actual example or some idea of what an example might look like if it were to converge in the Cesaro sense, but not weakly?
Again, it's not Cesaro sense, but you can get a sequence that does not converge in the mean by just having 1 minus 1, 1 minus 1 in R. And since strong and weak convergence are the same in finite dimensional spaces, that will be, it won't converge strongly, hence it won't converge weakly, and it will also not converge in the average.
It will converge, you mean? In the average. We wanted.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah, it goes to zero in the average.
That's right. Okay. So yeah, so this one is you can just take R as suggested to be your Hilbert space. And the sequence 1 minus 1, 1 minus 1 works. Okay, and did anyone have other thoughts or approaches to that? That's arguably the simplest example that achieves that. Okay, and then what about C? So now we want something that goes the other way, right? So this converges to zero in what they're calling the Cesaro sense for this problem. And it does not converge weakly. Right. Okay, and so for C, you want something the other way around, right? So you want something that does converge weakly, but not in this other sense. So one thing to start with would be something, I guess, that converges weakly but not strongly, right? Because it's going to do that.
This is actually really tricky too, because there's a theorem that says for any weakly convergence, any weakly convergent sequence has a strongly convergent subsequence in the average. So you have to construct a sequence which fails to do that too.
But that's a weaker statement, right? That's right. So it has a subsequence, but
it is weaker, but you quickly find that many
Many examples do that.
That's yes, many that's examples. Right. The subsequence is the sequence itself.
So that's a very good fact to note, right? So so you claim that there's a useful theorem to help guide your selection of an example, that if we have a weakly convergent sequence, there is a subsequence, which converges in this sense. Okay, so you're going to have to bear that in mind, right? But anyway, just to get started, though, so first of all, what's the simplest example of a sequence, or a good example of a sequence that converges weakly but not strongly in a Hilbert space? Because that might be the first thing to try. Yeah, that's right. But it doesn't work. But it's the first thing to throw at it, because it's an example that you know, right? So so try just E1, E2. E3, a basis, orthonormal basis, for H. So this sequence, this converges weakly to zero, but not strongly. But it does converge in this C sense. And this average to zero, right? So it didn't work, but it's again an example to keep in mind. So these are two guiding facts that one should keep in mind. Okay. So did anyone have thoughts for how you could get around this issue?
Could you multiply the basis by some decreasing function that converges in sum, but the convergence in sum goes to something else, like something finite?
Maybe. So you're going to try scaling the scaling. So your sequence, maybe I should say xi is equal to here, but so your sequence is going to be something like xi will be some constant ci times the basis element ei. Okay, that's a thought.
What about just 1e1, 2e2, 3e3?
That's another good idea. So
then it won't weakly converge, because a necessary condition for weak convergence of a sequence is that it's bounded. And if you have anything increasing in front of it, you lose the boundedness in norm.
That's a comment on this one.
Well, you can do stuff like you can blow the average up, but if you blow the average up, your norm will blow up too, and so you don't get weak convergence anymore.
Okay, so maybe I misunderstood. So the person who just gave this other suggestion, I think, was giving a slightly different suggestion. So what did you mean again? So I
said scale by a decreasing function or decreasing sequence.
Okay.
So it has to be decreasing.
But then the person who said to do 1e1, 2e2.
1e1, and then 2e2.
But you don't mean 2 times e2, right? You mean e1, and then e2, and then e2 again. Is that right? So x1 is e1, x2 is e2, x3 is also e2, and then x, is that what you meant?
Yeah, that will work, yeah.
That's, okay. So you get, so that doesn't change the scaling, right?
I thought they were saying to do 2 times E2.
But that's what I'm asking.
I did mean multiply, but yeah, this one.
Okay, all right. Well, okay. So I guess I put this idea into your mind, into your mouth. But in any case, that's another interpretation of what you actually said. And it doesn't have the property that you're changing the scaling.
It'll still fail, though, because when you take it in the average, it's equivalent to changing the scaling, right? Because you're doing E1 plus 2E2 plus 3E3.
But then you're dividing by a bigger number.
Yeah, but will the growth rates be different enough to affect the average?
That is actually up to you, right? So it has to do with how many copies of these you put in.
Okay.
Right. So, in other words, I'll give people a moment to just think it through and see if you can convince yourself that something like this will or will not work. And,
could you just swap between E1 and E2, which in average would be one half, and the rest zeros? But would that converge into zero? Converge weakly to zero?
No, it doesn't. So why does this converge? Why does this one work? Why does this converge weakly to zero?
Because it's the same. You can extract the originally weakly convergent sequence.
But just the original one. Why does the basis itself? Why does the basis itself converge weakly to zero?
Because if you take any function and expand it in its orthonormal bases, it'll have eventually in terms of Fourier series, it eventually cancels all the Fourier modes.
Right. Or if you think of it as a function, yeah, eventually it has to go down to zero, or else it'll be unbounded. It'll be infinite. That's right. So if you alternate between 1 and 2, of course, that's not going to happen, right? Because you could still have your support just at 1. So to make something like this work, you have to eventually escape away to infinity and never see that same basis element again. That basis element has to disappear, and the next one has to disappear from your list. Right? So alternating between 1 and 2 is not going to be weakly convergent. Okay, but this one, what about that one? In fact, even if we take 1 once and then 2 100 times and then 3 a million times, if we just take any number of times seeing the same thing before we move on, is that one still going to be weakly convergent to zero?
Yes.
Yes, it will. That's right, because it doesn't really care how many times you do it. That's, of course, totally different from this C sense, where it does care because it's averaging them. Right. Okay, let's see. So has anyone decided whether they think that something like this will work or not?
I'm pretty sure you can rewrite this sum as just 1 over n sum of 1 to n times, or of k e to times the basis vector.
Okay, so let's see. So you're rewriting this this sum up here under the assumption that that we're using this example down at the bottom, where the e's the x's are all some ei, and but the index is
right
is repeated. Okay. Yeah. So
and
then
the reason for that is simply if you take six terms of this, you're still dividing by six.
Uh huh. But let's just do the first six terms. If we divide that by six, so what do we get? So that's e1 over six. E2 over 3, and E3 over 2.
Which you can rewrite as one sixth times the sum of 1 to 3 of K EK.
That's correct.
That sum will blow up pretty fast, though.
That's good, actually, right? We're trying to get something that...
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to get something where that part diverges and the...
What if we somehow make every element, every basis element, like, appear, like, half of the time eventually? So E1, E2... Uh-huh. And then E3, E4.
Okay.
E5, like doubling the amount.
Doubling each time. Yeah, so that seems like that would be... so then you're going to have quite a bit of weight. You're always going to have something that looks like EK over 2, right? Plus some smaller terms.
Yeah, so that will never tend to zero.
That's right. Yeah, so I agree with that. Does that make sense? So again, it has to keep in mind what we're trying to do, right? This does converge in the weak sense, right? I keep forgetting it doesn't show up until I pick up the pen. Yeah, so that one does converge in the weak sense, but it, so we need one that does not converge in this average sense, and the as you just described, if we double each time, that is an argument that it does not. And again, what you were trying to argue here, it sounded like, was that it didn't converge, and that's good. That's what we're trying to show, is that it does not converge.
Yes, I got my order backwards.
Okay, all right, very good. Okay, all right, so are people mostly convinced that this will, actually, I think this is a very clean one, is if you use, if you double the number each time, because then you have this this term here, which very clearly is not going to zero. Okay. All right, any other thoughts or comments about this? Once again, this is an illustration of the utility of having some examples in mind, so you can play with them. You know, the basis itself is often the right example, but here people found a problem where it's not quite the right example, so you have to play around with it a bit. Okay. All right, so let's look at the next one. It's still dark up there.
Can we actually show rigorously that that sum diverges?
Yes. So let's see. Okay, let's go back to that problem. Talk about it in a little bit more detail.
Because in norm, it's bounded.
Yes, that's right. So we want to. So let's just try it. So let's try writing one out just carefully, just so that we have run out. So let's show. Xn equal to E hat K, where n is between 2 to the K and 2 to the k plus 1. Did I do that right? Yeah, okay. It does not converge in this sense.
Okay, I see. So you can basically make the, we don't have to do k, we could do like k squared, which would just, well, okay, sure.
I mean, the norm, you're right, is not going to, the one norm at least is not going to diverge, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so, yeah, sorry.
But it's going to do the same thing that the plus and minus one did. It's going to kind of bounce around and never settle
down. Okay. I am curious still to see.
Yeah, so let's just try writing one out. So yeah, so let's just try to do it correctly. So so we want this so it does not converge. Okay, so any suggestions? How would I start? Just the logic of writing out cleanly a proof that something does not converge, what would be a good way to start? Okay, well, let me suggest the contrapositive. So let's assume that it does and see what we can get, right? So assume Xn converges to some y. Okay. Okay, and so then this y, we can express it in our basis, right? So this is going to be a sum of y k ek, right? Because we can always write it this way. And actually, what does that mean? So this is this really means the limit, right? As k goes to infinity. So more precisely, this would be the limit as k goes to infinity of the sum to as capital K goes to infinity sum k. Right, that's just a shorthand for that. Okay, so we have such an assumption. Okay, so then what do we know? Well, we know that so claim.
We know that any particular coefficient must go to zero.
That's right. So eventually they have to go to zero. So in particular, here's one way to say that, right? So if I go out far enough, so I have my y, you know, I have y1, y2, y3. This is something. Right. So we know that. Eventually, these coefficients go to zero because this norm is bounded. Right? So we know that the claim there exists a n for all little n bigger than n. We have that the y sub n is less than a quarter. Okay, so that's a claim that we can prove separately. So does everyone, first of all, believe that that's a true claim?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. So we can prove that separately later. So we'll just use it now. And so if this is true, choose... Okay, and if this converges, so then we also note that since this converges, we can choose m such that for all little m bigger than that, we have n bigger than n, we have that x bar, let me try to get my notation right here. So I want to look at the mth x bar, and then I want to look at its n coefficient. So are people happy with that notation, or should I write it out? Maybe I'll write it out. So here I have x bar m is just the sum of x bar m sub n e hat n, right? It has some expansion in that basis. I just give a name to the coefficient. So we have this is within an eighth of y sub n. Okay, so is it clear that I can do that? If this is converging to it, then I just go far enough out and it's close. Okay. But now my quantifier is such that I can choose, but we also know that x sub 2 to the k bar has coefficient k equal to a half, right? Because that was how we constructed our sequence. And this is true for every k.
If that's true, okay, doesn't that have to go to 0 too, though? Or we're saying because 2m is fixed, it doesn't have to.
Well, we're trying to get a contradiction, and we will get that contradiction. See, what we've shown is that these x bars, what they look like.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
Right. And so, yes, so now this is a contradiction because we have one quarter. Because we have a half, a quarter, and an eighth, and they just don't add up correctly.
Okay, thank you for going through that, the whole process.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good thing to do, and I encourage you strongly to do this sort of thing at home, because it will really simplify writing up the solutions when you're faced with an exam, is to actually write things out like this in some detail. Hopefully even tidier than what I just did here. Yes.
This is perfect. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Any other questions about this? Contradiction.
Won't x to the 2mk be 1 over 2 to the n plus 1?
I'm sorry. Those characters are the same. It's just unreadable. Those are both k's.
I know, but shouldn't we have... Because what we're looking at here are the coefficients to just the sum without the averaging, right?
Let's see. No, so... it's hard to read. I'm not really fond of this whiteboard.
Because you wrote x in... Oh, I see. But
so these are, when I put the bar over it, it's been averaged.
Right. So why are these 1/2?
Why they're 1/2 is because what we have, if we actually compute this average, let's compute it. I'm running out of space on this board, but if we actually just compute x bar 2 to the k, what is that? So that's going to be 1 over 2 to the k times something. And when I multiply it out.
Not quite, because it's going to be 1 over...
Am I off by 1?
Oh, okay. No, you're good. You're good so far.
Yeah. And then it'll be times E1. And then it's going to be 2 times that. So 2. So 1 over 2 to the k minus 1 times E2. Right. And then it's going to be 4 times that, so 1 over k to, 2 to the k minus 2 times e3. And if I'd done my indexing more tidily, let me tidy it up. Then they agree, and I end up with something that looks like, well, I guess what I end up with is something like 1 over 2 times e k minus 1. K, I had it right before. Anyway, it comes out to be K. I could easily be off by
one. Yeah, something.
But it's going to be half. It will be the coefficient of the last one.
Half will be, okay, I see.
And that was how, I forget his name, but the person who suggested that built it, right? By putting, by doubling each time.
Right, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. All right. So if there are no further questions about this one, then we can move on. All right. So let's look at the next. Okay, so actually, does anyone have any suggestions of ideas that people might be trying here?
If we can extract an essential bound from property 1, we can just apply bounded convergence theorem.
Mm-hmm. That's a good suggestion. And did anyone try any other of the theorems that give us something when we have almost everywhere convergence?
Maybe DCT, find a control function, then apply DCT.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, why don't people spend a minute or two trying to see if they can make this idea work, if you haven't already. Actually, why doesn't someone who made that suggestion, there are two people who did, tell me, so what would we actually need for G, what properties would we need for G to make this work? Right, so G should be a measurable function, integrable. And I guess we also need that it's a bounds Fn.
Is there a way we can loosen it to bound only within, bounded almost everywhere?
You can probably do that. Most of these measurable things, everything is almost everywhere. Yeah.
Can we use Egorov's theorem here?
That's another interesting suggestion. I think both of them will work, actually. I'm never sure how to spell his name. I used F's earlier. Yeah, so that's another approach, and those are both sort of measurable types of things where almost everywhere is all that you need. Okay, let's see. So how many people are still trying this first method here to try to get that to work? Oops. Nobody? All right. Maybe we should discuss it. And is anyone been trying to get Egorov to work?
I think I got Egorov to work.
Okay, all right. So let's see. So did you want to explain how you got that to work?
Yeah, so I said let epsilon greater than zero be given.
Okay.
And then we can choose then there exists a subset of 0, 1 that we call E, such that the measure of E is less than epsilon and F of K restricted to 0, 1 less than E goes to 0 uniformly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can rewrite the limit in K of 0, 1 FK as the limit K on the two integrals 0, 1 less than E and E.
So
the limit of the integral of f of k.
Okay.
I was just ignoring bounds and stuff. But this is equal to the limit of the integral on 0, 1 less e.
Okay, let me just write it ec. E complement, okay.
Yeah. Yep, and then plus the integral on e.
Uh-huh.
And we can bring the limit. Since fk converges uniformly, that first integral is going to be 0.
Okay.
And then this for the second integral, we can apply Holder's inequality to get measure of e to the 1/2 times the L2 norm of fk to the 1/2.
Okay, actually, let me try this way. So this is equal to the limit of integral of E FK, and then you're bounding that using Holder by, so this is less than or equal to, I guess, the one norm?
It's the measure, I used measure of E to the 1/2 power.
Ah, I see, okay. I see, I understand. So you wrote it as FK times the characteristic function on E, and you were bounding it by that one norm, is that correct?
Yeah, well, so then I did,
and then
I did
Holder.
Yeah, 2, 2, 2 Holder.
Right.
And you get that times epsilon to the 1/2.
Okay, so this is then the 2 norm. And then this one you can compute. So this is, less than or equal to, and then epsilon to the 1/2.
And since that the 2 norm, its 2 norm is less than or equal to 1. So it's the whole thing is less than or equal to 1/2. And since epsilon was arbitrary, the limit holds.
Looks good. Okay, does that make sense, everyone? So you break it into big and small. That's what Egorov allows you to do. And on the small side, it's uniform, so you can make that go away. And then you just need enough of a bound to deal with the set of small measure, and that's what the two norm bound is giving you. Okay, great. And did anyone have thoughts about how to get the first one to work? How to build a G?
I was thinking of just using simple functions.
Okay.
So if you use simple, you can, in the normal integrable case, you can use simple functions to show that Fn is essentially bounded.
Okay.
And then,
all right. So you're going to build G out of simple functions?
Yeah, so it's essentially bounded on an E similar to Egorov's theorem. And then it kind of follows the same way.
Oh, I'm sorry. So you're not doing this first example. You're not providing a G. You're doing a separate argument.
You use the simple functions to bound F on a set E.
Ah, okay.
Egorov's theorem.
Okay.
So, and then you just do the same thing effectively.
I just realized there's sequences which converge weakly in L2 which are unbound. Like they'll have, we can produce a sequence that satisfies these two properties but blows up it point-wise. So, like, you won't be able to bound it by a G.
You can bound it on a set like E, so it doesn't have
yes. to. Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So that's what it does.
So also, it's important to note that G need only be integrable, right? It does it need not be
finite.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, in fact, one sort of thing you might do is if you want to break it into big and small, you could break it into where f is bigger or smaller than 1, for instance. Right, so you could try a function like G is equal to Fn. Oh, sorry. Actually, that's not a good. No, not a good example. Sorry, I'm just wrong. Okay. Anyway, all right. So I don't have an idea, but Egorov worked, and it's. If people want to keep thinking about finding G's, that's another thing to try, or we can move on to the next problem. But bear in mind that the function G itself need not be bounded. So G should be some map from the domain to R bar, so in other words, it could be actually it should be R plus bar, so it should be, but it's allowed to be infinity as long as it still has a finite integral.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So any other thoughts or comments about this one? Okay. Right. And actually, I mean, one thing to think about before we move on to the next one is you can try to use the Egorov splitting to then build this G, which is, I think, very similar to what you were just saying, to use the simple functions and use the Egorov theorem to give you a splitting into a big piece and a little piece. Okay, but anyway, if there are no further questions about this one, let's look at another problem. Okay, so again, let's spend a couple of minutes reading through these and thinking about how you might approach these different functions. And of course, if you have any notation questions, please ask. Okay, let's see. So people want to spend another, please raise your hand if you want to spend another minute or two, otherwise we can start looking at these. Okay, all right. So so maybe I'll just start with a table. So this is kind of a big problem, right? So it's got all these different parts to it, A, B, C, D. And there are three possibilities here, almost everywhere. Strongly and weakly, right? So those are the things that we have to determine. All right, so let's see. So did anyone have any thoughts about, you know, how to approach any of these sequences of functions or the types of convergence? So first of all, this the fact that they're both L2, what does that give us? That opens up a useful technique.
Fourier series?
Yes, exactly. So the Fourier series form a L2 isometry, so we can use the Fourier transform if we want, or series. All right, because the Fourier transform here from L2 of 0, 1 to little L2 is an isometry. Okay, well, let's see. So it's a big task. All 12 of those are some of the sequences of functions or one of the types of convergence easier to work with so that we can kind of get started. Okay, well, if not, let's just choose one. So let's just start with A and C. Is that one almost everywhere convergent? Okay, so we're looking at e to the 2 pi i root n x on 0, 1.
It should not.
Okay, and why not?
It just moves around the unit circle and...
Exactly, that's right. And so if you just think about what it looks like, as you say, these are all norm one, and so it's just moving around on the unit circle and is not converging at most points. Okay, so not converging. All unit length and not and changing. Okay. So is that for the one? So this is no. All right. Any others that are straightforward to get our hands on? Well, Well, let's continue with A. So is that enough information to tell us anything about the strong or weak convergence?
It weakly converges to zero, right?
Okay. All right, and what would suggest that?
That it kind of dances around the origin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a reasonable. So, what if I consider the subsequence where I just take n's to be squares? So the subsequence e to the 2 pi I, and then I'm going to take square root of squares, so square root of m squared x, so just m. So what is that sequence? That one's familiar. We were playing with it a minute ago. Right, so if I think of these as elements of L2, what have I just written down, this collection here?
The basis.
Axis?
Yeah, they're orthonormal, right. Maybe not quite ortho, but close enough. Yeah, so they're essentially an orthonormal basis, right? So, I mean, they're certainly orthogonal, and maybe I've messed up the scaling by a constant, but... that's right. So, and if we choose that basis, then we understand how that converges, right? So, so this is a basis. So it converges weakly, and does not converge strongly, right? Okay, so how much do we learn from that? I found a subsequence that converges weakly and does not converge strongly. So does that tell me whether the original sequence converges strongly?
Yes, because if the original sequence converged strongly, then the subsequence would also have to converge strongly.
That's right. But what about weakly?
Well, we know it doesn't converge strongly because it doesn't converge in norm.
That's also true. Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, but the subsequence is not enough information to tell me that it does converge weakly, right?
Correct. Yeah.
But it's a good hint, and it's a good suggestion that that's likely to be what's happening. Okay. All right, so we've got a couple techniques now. We've got this norm method, and some of them stayed large so that we knew that they weren't converging almost everywhere. Has anyone sort of worked out similar facts about the other three sequences, whether they're converging almost everywhere or have some norm issue that prevents them from being strongly convergent?
B and C converge almost everywhere.
Okay.
Because the exponential function decreases just way faster than n increase. Well, except for when x is zero.
Correct, which is a set of measure zero, so we don't care. Correct, exactly. Mm-hmm. So B and C by computation converge almost everywhere. Great, does everyone agree with that? Okay, and so then, and what about D? Is that one?
Can I ask how much of the computation do you write on the test?
It's a good question. Yeah. So that's a very good question, and this is a good one for that. This one, you could almost just assert it. Because of the fact that you just noted that you can just write by computation, you know, for all x not equal to zero, you know, this limit goes to zero. I wouldn't feel the need to say much more than that. The grader would understand once you noted that x is not equal to zero that you could probably have done the remaining piece that you'd want on a, you know, on a calculus exam, for example. But you know, a L'Hopital rule or something like that. But I wouldn't do that.
Would it be adequate if I just write exponential is faster?
It would. That would be quite sufficient. Yes. Right. Okay, so those are a couple thoughts. So maybe we could just play a little bit with D. So how might one approach D here? What happens to D under the Fourier transform, for example? Is it clear with the Fourier series for the I mean, it's basically written as Fourier series, right? So it's just going to be something that's a bunch of ones and then zeros. Okay. All right. Well, it seems like we've got several techniques for looking at these. I mean, there's 12 of them, so it's a bunch to look at. I'm not sure how useful it is to do much more. What I would do now is go through and actually do some of the suggestions that have been made here. So go through and actually compute what happens to the norms and just see how bounded these are. Okay, so does anyone have other thoughts about this one, or should we move on to the next one?
Can I ask just another general question?
Okay.
Is it possible, for example, like the B and the C problem, that you could be doing something like a ratio test on this and they would expect you to know like a very sort of out of place calculus skill?
That is possible. Yes, that is possible. Yes, it wouldn't hurt to be able to do that sort of thing. Yes. Yeah, it's certainly possible that a power series type thing could arise and be the relevant computation to do. Okay, any other questions about this one? So this might be a good one also to think about overnight, and we'll just run through these again and see if there are comments on them tomorrow, just like we did today with yesterday's. Okay, so then we still have a little bit of time, so let's go and look at the next one. We're finally starting to get some light outside. Oh, wait, did we already look at this?
Didn't we do this earlier?
We did it in the wrong order. That's what happened. Or maybe I read it twice. Sorry. Okay, so let's go to this one then. Okay, sorry. So here's a new one. Okay, let's see if people had a chance to think of any ideas for how to approach this one.
Does the triangle inequality help?
Let's see. Maybe let's see. So you'd be thinking for the L1 norm.
Yeah.
Okay, and let's see, were there other ideas?
Would Egoroff help?
Egoroff seems, again, very reasonable. Because once again, this is something that's happening almost everywhere. In trying to use Egoroff, though, remember what the conditions are.
A key or E is not known to be bounded.
That's right, and so that's an issue. So worry is that E is not necessarily bounded. So you can only apply it to bounded subsets of E. Right.
I think maybe we can use DCT. Dominant convergence theorem.
Okay, that seems very plausible. That's another good one for almost everywhere convergence. Okay, let's see. Do people want to spend like a minute or so trying to get that to work then? And then we can check in and see if someone's got it all working.
So since it's non-negative, that second property, or the FK, the integral FK going to F, that's convergence in norm.
I'm sorry. So this one here, you mean?
Yeah, that means convergence in norm. And then does FK pointwise F, is that stronger than weak convergence? Because then we'd have a weakly convergence sequence which converges in norm, which is the same as strong convergence.
Oh, that's right. So we can use that weak convergence, so weak plus norm convergence implies strong convergence. Yeah, that's a good one to try to make that one work out, and that may well be there.
I guess that's kind of what the question is asking us.
So it's just that they're a little bit different, right? Because here they're giving you the point-wise.
Yeah, that's true.
Point was almost everywhere, and replacing the weak, right? So that's the, yeah.
L1 is not a Hilbert space, L1.
That's true.
Yeah, so
but we convert.
That's also a good point, yeah.
For my triangle inequality, I think I meant the reverse.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Oh, the reverse triangle inequality.
Ah, okay. Okay, all right, let's see. So did anyone get this, get one of these to work? Okay. All right, so let's see, how about trying to build a function for the dominated convergence theorem? Have people attempted that?
Would something like 2f work?
So that seems like a good idea to start with. So try g equals 2f.
Yeah, I think it does work. So the absolute value of f minus fk is less than or equal to absolute value of f plus absolute value of k, which, okay, well, hold on.
So let me suggest another way to try to show that something goes to zero is to try to show that for each epsilon it's less than epsilon, right? So it's enough to show that it's fix epsilon and show that it's less than epsilon. And so then you might be able to break your space into pieces.
think I can use a trick I've seen before to solve this problem.
All right, very good.
Define gk of x equals to the minimum of fk and f.
Mm-hmm.
And then hk of x equals to the maximum of fk and f.
Okay.
And then we can apply DCT to so GK integral of GK will converge to the integral of F since GK is bounded by F. Yes. And also HK will the integral of HK will converge to the integral of F. This is because equal to F plus FK minus GK.
FK minus GK.
Yeah, and then by the condition integral of FK will converge to the integral of F.
Okay. Yeah.
So, HK minus GK will turn to zero, and that is what we need to prove.
So,
rewrite that.
Yeah, okay, very good. Yeah, so then you have an integral of this thing we're interested in.
Yeah.
Is equal or. F minus H minus G, right?
Yeah, H minus G. HK minus GK, yeah.
Right. And so then this goes to zero.
Just to zero, yeah.
Nice. Okay, yeah, that's very clean, and that's right. So it's kind of a tricky application of DCT that works. Okay, let's see. So we're about out of time now. So are there any thoughts or comments? I'm happy to hear comments or thoughts about how these are being run. If you have suggestions, if things are particularly helpful or unhelpful, I'd be useful to hear sooner rather than later so that we can try to get you prepared for the exams. Feel free to email me or make comments. Otherwise, all right, my thought for tomorrow would be to do pretty much what we did today. So please take the opportunity to look at one of the problems that we talked about today and try to write it up carefully, because we did one with some care earlier, and I think it's a very helpful for you to prepare for exams to do that. And then I will plan to do what we did today, to go over these six problems again, look at another old exam, and then look at something from another topic which I haven't decided on yet. So far there's been a request for Sobolev inequality, so I will certainly spend some day on that, but probably not tomorrow. Okay, any other questions or comments or thoughts? Okay, well, anyway, it's afternoon and there's a small amount of light outside now. But anyway, hopefully the smoke will lift at some point, and we'll see you tomorrow.